You can find his work online. And definitely visit the new Comcast Sportsnet website. Looking good. CSNNW.com. Become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Talking ball on the tube. Comcast Channel 737 in high def. We welcome in Mr. Aaron Fentress. AF, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
All is well. So about 15 minutes ago, the word came down that they granted Dylan Ennis another year of eligibility. Have you, in fact, booked your trip to Glendale and the Final Four yet?
I just did.
Wow, that was quick. Priceline? Huh?
It would be criminal for them not to make the Final Four. I'm saying, like, arrest everybody, contract the program, bring back wrestling. This team is stacked.
You know, I think it ties in. You with Jordan and some of the gang on Talking Ball, and Richard Lucas was there, and they asked who should fans be more jazzed about, hoops or football. Did that question have much teeth to it? And if it did, is it now over?
It did. I thought I picked basketball. Lucas picked basketball. I think Jordan abstained, and Carson said football still football, and not as many people follow basketball. He said Austin will be packed, and MKA will be empty. Which, yeah, he makes a great point. But that's not, you know. But the situation is this: the football team is going to be intriguing. I mean, I think they're going to be. You know, there's an outside hope that they might, you know, win a couple close ones and Crew Cup comes through and the defense turns things around, and next thing you know, they're 11-1 going into the Pac-12 title game. You know, that's possible. I give that a 15% chance. And they're always, you know, the Ducks are always exciting in the football field, so that's going to be fun just to watch them from entertainment value, even if they only win 9 games or 10. But the Ducks basketball team, this is the greatest returning team in the history of the program. They are going to be a clear Pac-12 favorite, I would imagine. They're going to go from being 7 deep to 10 deep with the addition of this young man, Ennis, who's going to be a definite step up from already a very nice point guard in Benson. Benson took care of the ball well. This guy will put the ball in the basket and be a threat on offense. And then you have Benson backing him up more than likely. So, yeah, I think the basketball team is going to be very, very exciting. I think people need to jump on that bandwagon right away and get to know these guys a little bit better if you didn't last year, because they should make a deep run. Now, we all know about March Madness. We've seen many a great team go into March Madness and lose the second round. You're like, what the heck happened?
Yeah.
So there's always that possibility. And this team was a one seed last year. And sometimes things just don't bounce your way. Didn't like half the one seed, what, did like 3 one seeds lose in 1 weekend or something last year?
Well, they've all 4 made it only once. So one or two get knocked off.
But what was the stat last year? Like a bunch of 2s went out, didn't even make the Sweet 16 or something. I know Michigan State lost early. Anyway, the point is that, you know, being number one seed is not going to guarantee how far they go in a one-and-done tournament, but this is a team that has Final Four written all over it. Like last year, I think you said, they might, you know, they'll make a run. We'll see what happens. But I never believed they were quite going to make it. This year's team, I say, or this, next season's team, I say, yes, they are a Final Four team. It's going to be upset if they don't get there.
By the way, I just happen to have my bracket with me. Carolina was the only one seed that went. You had Oklahoma a 2, Nova a 2, and, of course, Syracuse kind of came out of nowhere as a 10. So, yeah, 3 of the 4 ones didn't make it last year.
Right. So
there you go. You're backed up by statistics. we're talking with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet. You guys brought up another topic, and I was like, didn't we agree that this is a done deal and we learned our lesson? Is there an actual competition at quarterback between Travis Johnson and Dakota Prukop to see who starts at quarterback? Or is this one of those, while you never know, you kind of know?
You know, I think it's in between where Mariota and Bennett were and where Adams and Lockie were. I think Adams was a lock. Like, it was, once he showed up, it was clear he was a starter. I think they knew that Lockie was not going to be ready to lead them to a winning, not a winning record, but lead them to into contention. And Adams was just so much better that, you know, the moment they saw him throw a pass, it was like, okay, that's settled. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's pretty much the truth. you know, the Bennett Mariota competition was definitely wide open in theory because Bennett had played the year before, but all the buzz was watch out for this kid Mariota. So it was like, I think when you're looking back on it, after it happened, it was like, yeah, the signs were there that Mario was going to be the guy, but Bennett was formidable. In this case, I think Prukup's the guy, but Johnson is formidable without the experience that Bennett had.
Right.
And he's just so young. Like, I just don't think he's going to be ready to lead a team into contention in the Pac-12 as a redshirt freshman, especially after missing so much practice time last year. But from the people I've talked to, it's not exactly a slam dunk. And which is good because that means they like Johnson a lot moving forward. So the numbers I got from a couple people were one who's definitely close to the program said 90% Prukup. Another one who's a little closer to the program said 75%.
Huh.
And that because Johnson did some nice things in spring, and if he made a quantum leap this summer, heck, you know, maybe he could take it because maybe his ceiling's higher. But I go back to the spring game where, you know, Johnson was sacked a bunch of times. And he said after the game, part of that, a lot of that was his fault, you know, not checking into different protections and not getting rid of the ball. And again, he's sacked in a game where you can't touch the quarterback.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So those little things, those nuances that Prukup, an experienced quarterback, can probably handle better, I think will give him the clear edge. Now, if Prukup struggles at any point and they go to Johnson, Johnson could take it and run with it. But I think clearly, you know, the good money is on Dakota that he's going to be the starter.
All right, let's leap over to the NBA. I had a couple people who, when they found out when you were coming on, was like, ask them about the Trailblazers. So from what you've observed, who have you spoken with, whether it's Dwight Howard, Horford, Barnes, what sounds realistic as far as an expectation for who Portland might land?
Chandler Parsons and some unknown big man.
Yeah, that's kind of what we suspected.
I mean, reality is setting in now. You know, it's always fun to talk about this stuff. That's why when there were reports that Dwight Howard was interested and not looking for a big market and might want to come to a place with less expectations and Portland was on his short list, it's like, oh, my God, you jump all over that. And then there were some Blazer fans like, oh, we don't want that guy. We don't want Dwight Howard. It's like, what are you talking about? You think you're going to do better than Dwight Howard? I mean, seriously, you think the Portland Trailblazers are going to sign someone better than Dwight Howard? I mean, really? No, they're not. And the Whiteside thing, Whiteside's meeting with them, but there's already reports out there that the two true contenders are that he stays in Miami or goes to Dallas. But he is meeting with the Blazers. So, you know, they might swoop in and steal him. And then, you know, the Harrison Barnes thing, I've always thought he was redundant, especially if you keep Allen Crabbe. I'd rather have Aminu and Allen Crabbe at a combined, you know, $18 million a year than pay, you know, Harrison Barnes $20 million a year.
Right, right.
And then let Crabbe go. And then I just don't – to me, he's not a $20 million guy. He's not going to make them – I mean, let's say they went 44 games last year. You add him, you give him Crabbe's minutes because you let Crabbe go, and a few of Aminu's minutes and some of – McCollum's shots and you win three more games.
Right.
I mean, I just don't see how he elevates you at $20 million a year. So I think they're going to, you know, Horford, I don't think Horford even knows where Portland is.
Sure.
If he has a shot to go to OKC to join Durant, Westbrook, and Oladipo, forget about it. Now, there is something interesting out there that, you know, Enes Kanter, who the Blazers went after last year, offered a restricted free agents contract to, a huge one, that the Thunder matched. Apparently, the Thunder are looking to move him now because they're trying to clear cap space to go after Horford.
Wow.
Because they just got Sabonis in the trade and Oladipo. They gave up Ibaka. Horford takes over Ibaka's spot. You upgrade your two-guard situation with Oladipo. You got Sabonis backing up Adams and then whatever big man you pick up as well. So I think that definitely makes the Thunder better, and we saw how good they were in the playoffs. So if Kanter's available and the Blazers can swing some kind of deal, then you get your big man that way. But they're supposed to be meeting with Chandler Parsons right now. So I just think as of right now, it's going to be probably an underwhelming free agency period for the Blazers unless they are able to pull some kind of deal. And I think when this is all said and done, when you go back to those Blazers fans who hated Dwight Howard and said, would you take Dwight Howard now? They'd say, yeah, please.
Well, our theory here is the next big name free agent the Blazers sign is the first one, literally, in the history of the franchise.
Dwight James was telling me that off the top of his head, the biggest name free agent he thought they'd signed ever was Kenny Anderson.
It was. That one, if you do the math, for he made an all-star team, he was a lottery pick, but by the time he got here, it was like, it wasn't really a splash, it was more ripply. than anything like that.
And he never really lived up to expectations anyway.
No.
I think Portland's made some nice middle-of-the-road free agency pickups. Like Derek Anderson was good.
Yep.
Wesley Matthews was a good pickup, Brooke Lopez. But, yeah, they've never really gotten that difference-maker free agent. That's why I said if Dwight Howard wants to come here, I don't care if he's not as great as he was before. If he's 17-12 and 2.5 blocks, you get that guy in a nanosecond. But that's not going to happen either because I don't think he's even – scheduled to meet with the Blazers.
No, not as we speak. Final thought. On Monday, we learned about the passing of Buddy Ryan. And, of course, most famously, the defensive coordinator, the architect of the 46 defense. And obviously being a big Bears guy beyond specifics and stats. When you think about him, that defense, and that almost perfect season, what pops into your head?
God, first Rose gets traded, then Buddy Ryan. It was just a rough.
Yeah, it's enough already there. For Fentress.
No kidding. Okay, so I was a Bears fan. You know, obviously I'm from Chicago. Bears fan forever. Loved Walter Payton, and they never really won. I remember them losing whenever they made the playoffs. And they barely made the playoffs. And then in 1984 is when things started to sort of really turn around, and it all started with the defense. Because they were still trying to figure out quarterback, but you had Payton and you had the defense. And the defense just all of a sudden just started just kind of suffocating and dropping people. And then they played the Redskins in a playoff game at Washington, and the Redskins were favored. They had just gone to Super Bowl, I think, twice in a row.
Yep.
And the Bears went in there and beat them. And at the time, that was by far the biggest Bears victory I'd ever watched. And they did it primarily with the defense. And Fuller was the starting quarterback, so it was Payton and the defense. Payton threw a touchdown in that game. And I just remember the defense just chasing around Joe Theismann and throwing him around like a rag doll. And then, of course, the next week they went and got smashed by the 49ers. But even in that NFC Championship game, the defense played pretty well. I think they got beat 26-0, but the 49ers struggled to score. They scored mainly because the Bears offense kept giving them field position. But the point was is that you could tell that things were turning around finally for the Bears, and it was all happening on defense. And it was all Buddy Ryan and his innovative scheme of basically saying, we're bringing more than you can block. And if you get the ball off, that's great, but we're going to hammer your quarterback. And then in 85, they should have been arrested for assault like every other weekend. What they did to Joe Ferguson in Detroit and every other Detroit quarterback they threw out there, what they did to Hogaboom and Danny White in Dallas when they beat them 46 or whatever, 48-0, whatever it was.
Worst loss ever.
Criminal.
Worst loss ever at the time, and it was in Dallas. It was glorious.
I mean, literally, I was like, run, Danny, run. Richard Dent's going to kill you. Oh, you're dead. So it definitely was innovative. And, you know, all great innovation has a counter, and the counter to what he was doing was to spread people out. And if you think about it, the 46 defense and what it did to the modern eye and split-back formation systems and forcing teams to spread out more really helped sort of start the ball rolling in that direction into what we see now today as a counterattack to that type of defense. And we saw the Ravens use a little bit of some of that 46 stuff when they were dominant. Another defense is still bite it. You still use it situationally, but the Bears used it most of the time, and definitely an innovative guy. And, you know, some people are saying he should be, even though he didn't have a great head coaching career, that his defenses were dominant enough and what they did in 85 that maybe he deserved to be a Hall of Famer just based on his assistant career and his innovation. So we'll see. But I would vote for that.
Yeah, his first year as a coach was, believe it or not, he was the line coach for the Jet team that won the Super Bowl. I actually saw that 85 team. They came to the Meadowlands, and I still have nightmares, and Kenny O'Brien probably has the same one. I think they had like 130 total yards.
And wasn't that like a 16-0 game?
19-6.
19-6, okay.
Yeah, it was, and that was a Jet team that ended up going 11-5. So there you go. Yeah, they were something else. All right, man. I don't want to bring up any more depressing things, but you have a great weekend, and we'll catch up next Thursday.
All right, take care.
Take it easy.